It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking this hour mainly about the Carbon Emission Initiative the president put forward this week. Joining me now to discuss that, Jerry Schnur. He's an environmental engineer, professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering, also co-director of the Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research at the University of Iowa. Jerry Schnur, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Ben.
We want to talk about this initiative and distinguish between what we just heard about the most polluted city in Iowa and this initiative, reminding our listeners that the president announced that the Environmental Protection Agency is proposing a plan that would aim to slash carbon dioxide emissions, one of the things that comes out of smokestacks at power plants, by 30% by 2030. And we want to have your reaction, River to River listeners, to the president's carbon emission initiative. Long overdue? Is it a job killer, a job creator? What do you think it means for us here in Iowa? So some of the questions that we'll be asking and hopefully getting answers to this hour. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Comment for a moment, Jerry Schnur, about what you heard Adam describe there in Muscatine. A surprise, I think, to many listeners that we have a community that is that heavily polluted in the air.
That was an interesting interview with Adam Burke, but I should maybe make a distinction between the new Obama rules and regulations, which are to control greenhouse gas emissions, carbon dioxide, and the regulations concerning air quality, which really were the gist of that interview. Acetaldehyde is regulated as a hazardous air pollutant, and particulate matter and other gases emanating from coal combustion cause the problem in Muscatine.
But carbon dioxide is not in the same grouping in terms of pollutants?
The reason why maybe it makes sense to talk about it together on the show is because if you reduce coal combustion, you'll improve both conditions. You'll improve the air quality, for example, in Muscatine, and you'll also decrease carbon dioxide emissions and greenhouse gases. So the new rules from Obama have the foreshadowing of a significant reduction in coal-fired power production. And that's part of the air quality problem in Muscatine area. But specifically the acetaldehyde issue and the cough and so forth, that's a specific industrial chemical.
Specifically to the president's initiative through the EPA, what's your reaction as an environmental engineer? You're in the "this is long overdue" camp, I'm imagining.
Yes, I think we need this new regulations. There's about a year comment period, I guess. But I would say that we need it because we've made very little progress. Certainly, as a planetary body, our emissions just continue to go up, up, up. And it really is a global issue, so we have to talk about what our contribution to mm-hmm. the global carbon dioxide emissions. But also, even as a state, our emissions continue to go up. Yet the United States emissions have turned the corner and begun to go down. So one might ask, you know, why can't Iowa do the same thing?
Mm-hmm. The president made his announcement from a medical center. We heard a clip from that just a moment ago where he visited children with asthma aggravated by air pollution. What do you think of this tack by the administration, shifting some of the focus, at least, from what carbon emissions may do to our planet in terms of climate change in the future to the cost in the present to our health?
Well, the reason that Obama can do that, it's a bit obtuse, but the reason he can do that is under the Clean Air Act, the Supreme Court first ruled that EPA could judge whether greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide are endanger human health and welfare. And EPA made that judgment, I think, in 2008, that indeed they do. So, again, the idea is that by curbing greenhouse gases, that will mean a reduction in particulate matter and ozone in the atmosphere, which should improve health. In fact, we know now from very good epidemiological studies that have been tested and retested that when fine particles go up in the atmosphere, people check into the hospital and some don't come back out. It's both cardiovascular problems, heart attacks and strokes, as well as asthma and respiratory diseases.
The proposal discussed this hour, the plan to slash carbon dioxide emissions from existing power plants, coal-fired plants, 30% by 2030. That's our discussion this hour. Iowa is 16th in the nation in coal power generation. According to my facts, 72 operating coal-fired-powered units at 28 stations in the state. Let's get a perspective of power generators in our state. MidAmerican Energy and Alliant Energy, two of the largest electricity providers in the state, declined our invitation to be on this program. They both said, more or less, they want more time to review the proposal before offering comment. However, we do have, and we're very glad to have, Reggie Goodale with us, Director of Regulatory Affairs for the Iowa Association of Electric Cooperatives. This is a Des Moines-based service organization representing the state's rural electric cooperatives. Reggie, hello to you.
Good afternoon.
Tell us, there's been worry about the Obama administration's initiative from some sectors, I think from power generators. What is the reaction of your association?
Yes, the reaction of the Iowa Association of Electric Cooperatives is we are certainly looking at this. This is a very serious policy that has come forward. The Iowa Electric Cooperatives support a responsible environmental approach to environmental regulations, but we are concerned of two things. Number one, as we see the member owners each month as they go to their mailbox and receive their electric bill from their electric provider, and they open that bill up, looking at it with these policies that have come out this month, as well as the rest of the EPA's portfolio of environmental regulations, how is that really going to impact that electric bill when our member owners open that bill up and take a look at it? That's one of our main concerns. Mm-hmm.
But you're not saying it will raise costs, so I don't hear you say that.
I think this will raise costs. I think the question is how much will it raise costs?
Mm-hmm.
The other concern we have is taking a look at the reliability of the system. If these regs cause too many plants to go offline long term, will those lights come on when our member owners put their finger onto that light switch and flip it? We need to make sure and work with our president and with the EPA and other stakeholders on this to make sure that we move forward in a very responsible way with environmental policies, but also taking into account the electric bills that our member owners are paying every month and making sure that that light switch is flippable when it's time they need that electricity.
Will this plan accelerate Iowa's shift away from coal to generate electricity?
I would think that that's going to happen over the term of the implementation of this. Like I say, we're still looking at the many, many pages of this and trying to figure out the implications of it. It's our understanding in looking at this that Iowa will need to put together a plan to figure out how to meet the goals that the EPA has laid out. We may be able to have some opportunity with some other states in putting that plan together. We have started those discussions with some of the stakeholders in Iowa to see what that plan might look like.
Mm-hmm. Going forward, how does Iowa's tremendous progress in wind energy fit into this picture? Can you comment on that? I don't know if your cooperative includes any people that deal in that.
Certainly. The utilities in Iowa and the co-ops included as well have added a lot of renewable energy to the portfolios. There's been a significant amount of wind added within Iowa, the fence within Iowa, and we also have wind energy that we procure outside of the borders of Iowa for the electric co-ops. There's been several other initiatives that have been accomplished at existing coal and natural gas plants, investments in making those facilities more environmentally friendly and doing upgrades to those. We're working very hard with interconnecting member-owned wind system, member-owned solar systems. The whole portfolio of generation that's providing service to electric co-op members today is a lot different, a lot more environmentally friendly than what it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. On the poles and wires side of the business, there's a lot of things that are being done to also help with the environment. For example, on technology, leveraging technology to read the meters. The electric co-ops in Iowa have enough distribution lines to go around the Earth's equator 2.5 times. if we don't use technology to read those meters, we're effectively driving around the Earth's equator 2.5 times every month. So with that investment alone, we're saving transportation fuels and carbon, and that's a very positive thing. So I think our board of directors, our employees, take delivering service to the member owners very, very seriously and look for opportunities to do that in a very environmentally responsible manner.
Reggie Goodale is of the Iowa Association of Electric Cooperatives. Let's include also in our conversation, get him in. He will be here for the rest of the hour. David Kreutzer is with us. Before we take a break, let's get to a few of his views. Research Fellow in Energy, Economics, and Climate Change at the Heritage Foundation, a conservative Washington-based think tank. David Kreutzer, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. You've been listening to our conversation. Tell us up front, what is your reaction to the proposal made by President Obama this week?
Well, first of all, it will do nothing that we'll be able to measure as far as global warming. That is, the cuts that they're talking about, even if we cut everything from the U.S., in 100 years, it might make a couple of tenths degree moderation in temperature increase. This is much less than that. So I think there's broad agreement that this will do very little to impact global warming. It will create a new bureaucracy. It's likely to increase costs somewhat. To the extent that it does little as far as cutting CO2, it will do less to raise the cost of electricity. If this is just the first step of a multi-step plan to cut CO2 even more, then it will raise costs even more.
Mm-hmm. React to that, Jerry Schnur, what he just said, a skeptic of this new initiative.
Well, I think that costs, for example, in Iowa haven't increased significantly in electricity, even though we've significantly changed our portfolio to more than 25% wind in our electrical generation now in Iowa, and costs haven't increased. And I don't see necessarily that this will increase costs whatsoever. In fact, it could be really an economic boon, the driver that creates jobs and wealth and prosperity as we transition. This is just the beginning of a transition that's going to happen over the next couple generations, in which we change from fossil fuels to renewable fuels and energy efficiency. And this has been part of the Industrial Revolution for over 200 years now, and it's been a good run, but we're going to have to change. It's not that we're running out of fossil fuels. Rather, it's that we're running out of a place to put their emissions, mm-hmm. and they're affecting our climate.
David Kreutzer, we've got about a minute before we go to break. Yeah, get in there, please.
The Industrial Revolution hasn't been driven by mandates restricting access to affordable energy. And, the serious economists looking at this on both sides, I have, friends working at the Liberal Brookings Institution, they understand that there's going to be a cost. The question is, are you willing to pay the cost? Do you get a benefit that's more than the cost you pay? But you're not going to, stimulate the economy by restricting access to cheaper energy. Okay, that we need to make that clear. Right.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and then come back in just a moment with David Kreutzer, Research Fellow in Energy Economics and Climate Change at the Heritage Foundation in Washington. We want to thank you, Reggie Goodale, for being with us, Director of Regulatory Affairs for the Iowa Association of Electric Cooperatives. We'll say goodbye to you. Thank you, Reggie.
Thank you.
Staying with us, Jerry Schnur, an environmental engineer at the University of Iowa. We'll have a few other guests as we come back in the second half hour. I want to ask you, River to River listeners, your reaction to the president's carbon emission initiative earlier this week, actually on the weekend, announcing that the Environmental Protection Agency is proposing a plan that aims to slash carbon dioxide emissions from existing power plants by 30% by 2030. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Is it long overdue? Is it a job killer? Is it a bureaucracy creator or a job creator? 1-866-780-9100. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about the president's step this week, announcing that the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, is proposing a plan that aims to slash carbon dioxide emissions from existing power plants 30% by 2030. 30. And we have a number of people talking about that and our air quality. Jerry Schnoor is with us, an environmental engineer at the University of Iowa. David Kreutzer is with us of the Heritage Foundation, not supportive of the EPA proposal. He's a research fellow in energy, economics, and climate change at the Heritage Foundation. We'd like to have you join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. Let's get to callers right away before we meet a couple of other guests. Brock in Cedar Rapids, you've been listening. What's your reaction?
My reaction is that it's fairly disingenuous of the president and, frankly, the people put together the program today to link air quality with carbon emissions, because whether or not the science is, quote-unquote, settled on greenhouse gas emissions effect on the overall climate, even if the settle was that there was no effect from carbon dioxide, it would do nothing to improve the air quality in Muscatine or other places in Iowa, nor reduce by 100,000 the number of asthma attacks when current existing regulations and air quality are in place. And if they were enforced, then the particulate emissions, the emissions, the trace gas emissions from these power plants and coal-fired plants and factories, that would have a much greater impact on the overall public health than merely labeling carbon dioxide, reducing carbon dioxide, as having an impact on public health.
Well, if we got your point, Brock. Let's get a reaction, Jerry and David. Jerry, you made this point a little bit beforehand, but carbon dioxide, not a particulate emission.
Well, technically, Brock is right. It's two different set of regulatory actions required for air pollution from power plants versus greenhouse gases, but I think the link comes through coal. It's viewed that this new proposal from Obama administration will decrease the amount of coal in our power generation in the country, and that, in fact, will also decrease air pollutants like particulate matter and sulfur dioxide.
David Kreutzer, did you?
Yeah, I think Brock is more than just technically right. I think he's very much right. The two things. One, carbon dioxide is odorless, non-toxic, colorless, and so on. So that's not the cause of any of the health impacts. The reported health impacts come from the warming caused by the CO2. And as I've mentioned earlier, these regulations will do as close to nothing as you can do and still say you're doing something.
I disagree with that because Obama has gone
on. Let me finish my second point, then you can disagree with me. The second point is, in Muscatine, I don't know if there's a big power plant there, but all of the things I was hearing, you know, a corn processor and so on. There are three power plants. Okay, but those are not the sources of the things I think that are causing people's lungs to sting, but maybe they are. But it's only power plants that are covered. It's not industrial uses, okay? So it's only electric power generators that are covered by these rules. And it only, you know, cuts them by, you know, we've already cut CO2 in the U.S. economy by about half as much as these things are going to continue to cut it. All right, so there's about another 50% improvement that we're likely to get over what we've gotten without any of the regulations. Okay, sorry, go ahead, Jerry, and tell me what I missed.
Well, I would say, David, you know, and that's a good point that we've already, we're moving in this way to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in this country, and that's something to be applauded. And it really hasn't been onerous or painful to do that. In fact, it's actually increased jobs and not been costly in terms of the price of electricity. So you have to start somewhere, and Obama pledged to, with all other leaders in Copenhagen in 2009, to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 17% in the year 2020, and this would take us a long way towards that. So to be a part of the global community, I think we have to. Our word is on the line.
David Kreutzer, the big question here, too, is what about jobs? We know coal jobs would be lost when you reduce burning coal, but can we say overall if this is a job creator or killer?
To the extent that you look at jobs, you're looking at a disequilibrium phenomenon, to hate to use econ jargon. You know, eventually everybody will go back to work. It's just, will they have a crummy job or a good job? In the interim, the shift will probably cause some job losses because you're going to be driving up energy costs a little bit. If it were cheaper to make energy without coal, we'd already be doing that. And as Jerry pointed out, we are moving in that direction. And that's the reason one of the big reasons we've gotten CO2 cuts without any laws is because natural gas from hydraulic fracturing has gotten so cheap that it makes sense to shift over to gas from coal. And our economy has been pretty weak the last 5 or 10 years, and so that also helps reduce GDP growth. But that's not a good way to cut CO2 emissions by having a crummy economy.
David Kreutzer, Jerry Schnur, we have our phone lines full. Let's go to Charlie in Iowa City. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, just switched off.
Yeah,
speaker. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we're hearing you fine, Charlie. We're short of time. We've got a lot of people who want to talk, so go ahead,
sure, please.
I
work in Muscatine and have for the last 8 or 9 years, and I've had chest issues just about every year. I've had kids that I work with have asthma and so on, and really it's a topic that's never discussed. Nobody said, oh, it's probably that pollution or whatever. It's just not sort of under wraps as far as public discussion.
Okay. Charlie, thank you
from
Iowa. All right.
Thank you.
Charlie,
okay.
Calling 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk to an adjunct professor at Georgetown University Climate Center. Gabe Pasiniak is with us. Hi, Gabe.
Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thank you for being on our show. Now, you helped put together data for state-by-state climate and energy profiles. Can you give us an idea of the range of profiles that we have in the U.S. in terms of the states?
Sure, absolutely. And the Climate Center, the Georgetown Climate Center, where I work, is actually was founded to be a resource for states that are advancing clean energy policy, and Iowa certainly fits right in there. And so a couple of things that this tool does, it tries to provide a snapshot of the energy landscape, and it does that using graphs and charts. And so I'll tell you a little bit about some of the things we can learn today. If you're interested to check it out yourself, you can go to georgetownclimate.org.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you can see is that as we've heard today, much of the country has made some really dramatic reductions in carbon pollution from the electricity sector. And Iowa in the past, from 2005 to 2012, just about stayed the same in terms of the absolute emissions of carbon pollution. But I think very significantly, if you look, for example, on our chart at the change in the carbon pollution rate, you'll see that Iowa is really among one of the states that's made the most progress because it really has cut its carbon pollution rate. So that's how much carbon is emitted in the electricity sector per the amount of electricity that's generated. And that reduction was about 21%.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I think you all know that that's because Iowa has been such a leader in renewable energy. It has had one of the largest increases in renewable energy, 26% in that same time frame from 2005 to 2012. And you can see also, one of the other features that we have on our tool that I invite people to check out is the state profiles. And it allows you to take a look at both kind of the electricity generation mix, which shows that Iowa is a heavy coal state, as you all know, 62.3% of electricity generated in Iowa in 2012 came from coal, but that has decreased in the last couple of years. And that's important because, as Charlie pointed out and has been discussed on this call, the decreases in coal pollution lead to decreases not just in carbon pollution and the carbon pollution rate, but also in conventional pollutants like sulfur dioxide and nitrous oxide, which are harmful to health and actually do cause asthma and other other harmful illnesses. And I think importantly, Iowa right now has one of the highest carbon pollution intensities for NOx, for example. If you compare it to the rest of the United States, it's significantly higher than the U.S. average.
Let me put that point to David Kreutzer. What about all these benefits? Even though we see carbon emissions differently, don't we get a lot of benefits when we talk about costs, even if there are a few more costs on our energy bills of having fewer kids with asthma and other people suffering
That's why we've had laws on real pollutants for decades, and that's what most people outside the Supreme Court, I think, feel the Clean Air Act was written for. And we've made huge progress, and the power companies have spent billions of dollars cleaning up those emissions. And if that's what you're worried about, then make a rule directly on that. All right? Don't confuse carbon dioxide with soot and NOx and SOx and asthma and volatile emissions and so on. That's not CO2. But the activists that want to that are obsessed about global warming, they intentionally confuse people into thinking that carbon dioxide is toxic, that it is odorous. They show pictures of smokestacks, usually spewing steam, by the way, mm-hmm. when they're talking about carbon dioxide.
Intentional confusion, Jerry Schnoor?
Well, no, I don't think so. We're very concerned about climate change here, even in Iowa. In 2008, we had a tremendous flood. The clearest thing in our meteorological record going back 100 years is a big increase in the frequency and intensity of precipitation events. So we're suffering here. And I have to ask at some point, when do we begin to act? If not now, when? And so there may be the costs may be greater associated with not acting than acting. So I believe there's real savings to be made with for controlling and mitigating climate change as well.
Well, there's another confusion, because the IPCC in their science report from last fall said there is no trend in floods or droughts or hurricanes. The National Climatic Data Center says that there's no trend in tornadoes from warming. And as we've mentioned before, this policy will do almost nothing to combat any warming.
So, I'm not sure what you're referring to, David, because, again, the clearest thing in our record is a 45% increase in the one percentile precipitation events here in Iowa, and it's affecting us. We're having 100-year floods every other year.
I don't know about that. But what we can say, certainly some places are going to see, even if we had as close to climate stasis as you could possibly have, and we don't ever have that, there are going to be some parts of the world where rain events go up and some parts of the world where rain events go down. Then the next century, it's the other way around and so on. So you never expect things to be the same. So, you know, to say that climate change is only happening in Iowa doesn't make sense. When we look worldwide, we don't see a trend in floods, droughts, hurricanes, tornadoes.
Okay, David and Jerry, we have to cut this short. We want to get to some other callers and also another guest, Mark in Cedar Rapids. We're coming to the end of our program, but you wanted to make a point listening to this conversation?
Yeah, a couple of questions you asked for callers is, do you think this is a job killer or job creator? I don't think it's a question, but it's a job creator. When we switch from coal to renewable energy, it's definitely going to benefit Iowa's economy. We're building wind turbines. There's factories all over the state. There's new jobs for maintaining all those wind turbines and wind farms. It's only going to be good for Iowa's economy.
It's about 7,000 jobs created so far, and I agree with the call.
Okay, Mark in Cedar Rapids, thank you. Let's go. You dovetail nicely to Philip Warburg is with us, an environmental lawyer, author of Harvest the Wind, America's Journey to Jobs, Energy Independence, and Climate Stability. Hi, Philip.
Hi there.
You've studied this a lot. How will this initiative to reduce carbon emissions from power plants affect the great strides, as a matter of fact, that we're making here in Iowa toward more renewable sources such as wind energy?
First, I do want to credit Iowa as being a leader in getting wind energy going on a scale that can really make a difference, 27% in Iowa. There are some neighboring states, such as South Dakota, that get 26% of their electricity from wind, and Kansas gets 20% of their electricity from wind. We're moving in the right direction, but we have a long way to go, and I just really want to stress that our energy economy needs to undergo a fundamental transformation. According to various experts, we need to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions 80 to 85% from current levels by 2050 in our industrialized nations. We cannot do that if we remain as dependent upon coal as we are today, and I think that the Obama initiative moves us, albeit modestly, in the right direction. It does provide states with flexibility to come up with meaningful alternatives to our reliance upon coal, whether that be through the introduction of wind power or solar energy or geothermal energy or investing in energy efficiency. It is, I think, a great way to get states thinking and acting creatively to bring about the kind of transformation that we really need. And just one other point I'd like to make, and that is we are derided in the world as a laggard in our commitment to addressing the climate change challenge. And I think that this is a very important turning point for the Obama administration and for the United States in being able to go to Paris in 2015 to the next climate summit and put something on the table that looks like a genuine U.S. commitment to reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. People point to China and India as, you know, areas where we're going to see huge growth in carbon emissions. One of the reasons that China and India have held back from taking meaningful actions is they look at the United States and they say, well, if the United States isn't acting, why should we?
Okay,
we need to lead by example.
Mm-hmm. Philip Warburg, let's get the critic of this proposal to respond. David Kreutzer, you've been listening, and Philip, you've been listening to David before that. David, you say this is of little consequence, this action, and it just creates a new bureaucracy and makes more cost for us.
Right. The reason there's so much wind in the states that I just mentioned is because of the production tax credit. It's not because of getting rid of coal. We have run the energy department's energy model here at Heritage, and we plugged in. We said, what if we get rid of all coal? What happens? Of the coal, when you get rid of coal-fired power, wind replaces about 4% of the lost coal. 75 or 80% comes from natural gas. That's what swaps out. So that it's not this program we just had announced in Washington is not going to be driving wind energy development. The production tax credit, which pays wind producers about 40 or 50% of the wholesale price of electricity on top of the wholesale price of electricity, is what's stimulated all that wind production. The fact that China is somehow going to jump in and hamstring their economy because we cut our CO2 emissions by 5% is almost laughable. We have already developed technology for making burning coal much cleaner than it was 30 years ago. China hasn't adopted that. We've already developed the technology. They're not even turning it on.
Okay, so, a response from Phil Warburg. We've got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah. I just want to point to a study conducted by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in 2012. It projected that we could be getting 50% of our total power needs from wind and solar alone by 2050 using technology that is commercially available today. That, if we were to take that step, and that step is more than feasible, we would see a major reduction in our coal plant pollution, our coal plant dependence. We would also see a reduction in our greenhouse gases from gas, and that needs to happen as well. Gas is a transitional fuel. We need to move toward a fundamentally different basis for our energy economy that is very substantially dependent upon renewable energy.
I'll just read this email from Todd in Iowa City. He writes, ultimately, we need to transition to renewable or semi-renewable resources. An unwillingness to acknowledge the finite nature of what powers our society is regressive social policy. It's akin to watching the trees in a forest disappear and not developing ways to manage what is left until nothing exists. See how that affects costs. Okay, coming to the end of the hour, perhaps I want to have one more caller here, and then I want to make sure we get to all of our guests for comments to conclude this hour. Mark is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, there's a couple of quick points I wanted to make in question.
Very quick, please.
We've got these technologies today. You know, it's been proven. You know, we've shown here in Iowa, we've led this renewable energy industry, the solution to climate change. You know, 30% by 2030 is just spitting in the wind. You know, we need a complete replacement of our fossil system here in Iowa. We can do it. We can do it and make jobs. We can do it as almost as cheap as what we're getting away with coal right now, and not dump our pollution, you know, into the airshed. You know, these are all very doable. And the reason we don't is because we don't have control of the political process. Special interests are putting so much money out there to confuse this issue right now. We're listening to them instead of listening to our scientists.
Okay. Mark, thank you for that perspective. Sure. I'm sorry we're running out of time. Phil, we didn't leave you with much time. Please comment quickly.
Well, one thing I just want to say is Mr. Kreutzer referred to greenhouse gas emissions as not real pollutants. And with all due respect, the Supreme Court gave the Environmental Protection Agency authority to determine that CO2 and other greenhouse gas sources are real pollutants. These are pollutants that are devastating our global ecosystem and will do huge damage in decades and centuries to come. And we need to regard greenhouse gas emissions as every bit as important and every bit as damaging as the conventional pollutants that have been controlled under the Clean Air Act for the past several decades.
Okay, David Kreutzer, to sum up, 30 seconds, I can only
give you. Yeah, we're not obligated to pay fealty to the Supreme Court. We have to obey them, so I can still disagree with them. Climate policies should have benefits that exceed the costs. Okay, you can measure them however you want, you know, in terms of environmental quality and so on. But what we have here is a climate policy that does essentially nothing. Now, if you're going to say, yes, but we're going to go on to have 80% cuts, which we already know will do very little to world warming, then we need to look at the cost of doing that.
I have to cut you off there, David Kreutzer. Gabe Pasiniak, please, 30 seconds for you to conclude our program.
One of the great things about this rule that came out is that it really puts the ball in states' courts and allows states like Iowa that have already been leaders on clean energy to develop their programs to go further and really reduce both carbon pollution and other conventional harmful pollutants, doing things that they've already been doing and know how to do well.
Okay, Jerry Schnoor, the final word from you.
We really need this program to prevent climate change for the reasons talked about on this show, to create jobs. It will create jobs. And the secondary effects to improve air quality, to save thousands of lives and tens of billions of dollars in health care costs.
Okay, Jerry Schnoor, thank you very much. David Kreutzer, thank you. Gabe Pasiniak and Phil Warburg, thank you for the discussion. Sorry we didn't have more time for it. We appreciate, though, all your input.
Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, a News Buzz edition. Lots in that program. I look forward to having you join us again. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.